The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is That's a Laugh. For the next half hour, I'll be reading excerpts of funny stories, quotes, and other anecdotes from various sources that we hope will add a few chuckles to your day. Warmest greetings, my dear listeners. Now is the time of year that the weather is getting hotter, our New Year's goals are getting colder, and every day we are getting older, which is a good thing. No, really. No, seriously. Okay, while we may not want to think about never getting younger, we can always think about feeling younger. Of course, there are some smart ways to seem younger, and there are some, well, not so smart ways to make folks think that we look or feel younger. How to tell which is which? Today's author has us covered. We'll hear from the book Stupid Things I Won't Do When I Get Old, written by Stephen Petro, copyright in 2021. Let's start with the epigraph and introduction. Epigraph. It is not true that people stop pursuing dreams because they grow old. They grow old because they stop pursuing dreams. Gabriel Garcia Marquez. Introduction. I won't become like my parents when I get old. Not long after my 50th birthday, not coincidentally as my parents entered their sunset years, I began to keep a list of what I called the stupid things I won't do when I get old. Truth be told, this tally, which kept getting longer and longer, proved to be a highly judgmental, not quite mean-spirited but close, accounting of everything I thought my parents were doing wrong. My list covered all their poor choices, and I personally vowed not to blame the dog for my incontinence, Dad, or to forego a walker because it wrecked my outfit, Mom, or to join the chorus of organ recitals, that litany of aches and pains, surgery and sciatica, at dinner time, Mom and Dad. Was I the son who knew best? Perhaps. And as long as I'm confessing, my list even included shots at other old people I knew who were aging wrongly in my eyes. Don't turn your house into a sauna. Don't climb up on the roof to clean the gutters. Stop driving before your license is revoked, or worse, someone gets hurt. Don't double space after a period. I also knew that my parents, and others of their generation, were more than the sum of those aches, pains, and other sufferings. So much more. Once my parents were gone, I reread the list with a new and sometimes weepy eye. I realized that this accounting of stupid things reflected my own frustration at watching them pay the price for being stubborn, a personal trait I knew all too well. It also reflected my fear of what was to become of them as they shifted from old to ill. I see more clearly now that I meant the list to serve as a pointed reminder to me to make different choices when I eventually crossed the threshold into my senior, sunset, or silver years. By writing these promises down, I hoped to ensure that I remember and stick to them. By sharing them in this book, I hope that others come to a greater awareness of the choices we make once we begin to think of ourselves as old. I am often reminded of what my friend Andrew Weil, the nation's top integrative medicine physician, once wrote about aging. We are not hostages to our fate. At 63, am I old? It's certainly a question very much on my mind these days. It's also on the minds of a great many of the 70 million baby boomers now that we're all 55 plus. To get started on answering my question, I turned to friends on Facebook, my contemporaries, asking, when does old begin? Among the dozens of responses, two made me smile. Old age is my current age plus four. And this one, tomorrow, always tomorrow, never today. I did smirk when a female friend wrote, when you get called ma'am instead of miss. Men don't suffer that particular insult, although I die a little every time I'm called sir, or asked, what would the gentleman like for dinner? Other friends pointed to new physical limitations as the line in the sand between midlife and old age. A work colleague posted, when you can't jog a 15-mile anymore. When I have to stop playing tennis, added my friend Thomas. I challenged these two, explaining that at 40, I tore up my right knee and stopped both jogging and playing tennis. I wasn't old, but damn it, I sure was injured. I took up tennis again 15 years later and have been playing an awful game ever since. But that's not my point. The point is that old is not synonymous with ill, disabled, or even injured. I also posed the question to some very smart researchers who have been hyper-focused on the definition of old. Someone who is 60 years old today is middle-aged, explained Sergei Sherbov, who, along with Warren Sanderson, has pretty much redefined old for organizations like the United Nations and countries like the United States, Japan, and Senegal. Their research shows that the old age threshold in the United States is 71 for men and 74 for women. Before I could pour myself a flute of champagne or change my Tinder profile to say I'm middle-aged, Sherbov continued, our true age is not just the number of years we have lived. It depends on our personal characteristics, what we eat, how we exercise, whether we smoke, how happy we are. I'm sure we all know this list by heart. Basically, our physical and mental health. And don't forget that longer life expectancies and relatively low rates of disability and disease here in the U.S. also make a huge difference in extending middle age into our early 70s. Former President Jimmy Carter tackled what it means to be old in his elegant book, The Virtues of Aging. Carter, who is currently 96, by the way, wrote, the correct answer is that each of us is old when we think we are. When we accept an attitude of dormancy, dependence on others, a substantial limitation on our physical and mental activity. This is not tied very closely to how many years we've lived. By that measure, no, I am not old, and you may not be either, even if you are a boomer. I think Lemmy Kilmister, the lead singer of the rock band Motorhead, nailed the answer when he declared, I don't see why there should be a point where everyone decides you're too old. I'm not too old, and until I decide I'm too old, I'll never be too effing old. Age, like beauty, is in the eye of the beholder. That's why two people of the same chronological age might answer the am I old question so differently. Take this example. At a college reunion a few years ago, I listened to a talk by the silver-haired philanthropist David Rubenstein, who was then on the board of the Kennedy Center, the Smithsonian Institution, and the Council on Foreign Relations. And he held down a day job as co-executive chairman of the Carlyle Group, one of the world's largest and most successful private equity firms. In his talk to Duke alums, Rubenstein urged us to accelerate as we enter the last chapters of our lives. With this admonition in mind, I asked Rubenstein, then 69, if he considers himself old. 69 seems like a teenager to me, he replied without missing a beat. Since then, he's divorced his wife, has continued to read 100 books a year, and is a regular on the speaking circuit. No grass grows under this man's feet. Just a few days later, Margaret Peggy Ingraham, a 68-year-old poet I know, in between surgeries to help mend a broken wrist, had told me sorrowfully, "I am an old lady now." Because of her injury, for the first time since she'd been a teen, Peggy could not drive her own car. She also needed to hire a home health aide, which further deepened her sense of dependency, creating a self-identity that was old. There were so many simple things I couldn't do, like open a jar or a bag of potato chips, she explained to me. On the surface, it appears that physical independence, not age, made one of these near-septuagenarians feel like a teenager and the other like an old person. Indeed, loss of independence and mobility are among the core characteristics that define old. But was her wrist the only thing bothering my poet friend? I don't believe so. She also told me that living alone led to her feeling socially isolated. This was several years before the widespread isolation during the self-quarantines necessitated by the COVID-19 pandemic. Speaking of the pandemic, it's hard for me not to miss the irony that anyone over 60 is now considered old, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and therefore at risk for severe illness, even death, from COVID-19. It's as though we've suddenly been required to wear a scarlet O for old around our necks, a kind of public humiliation and a refutation that old is a state of mind and not a number. Attitude clearly plays a big part in this discussion. Once we start thinking of ourselves as old, it's so easy to fall into the trap of negative expectations. In fact, one study found that priming older adults with negative attitudes toward aging results in immediate declines in psychological, physical, and cognitive functions. I was actually astounded that a World Health Organization study reported that older adults subject to ageism lived on average 7.5 years less than people with positive views about getting older. Granted, stereotypes of what it means to be old can be hard to avoid. Turn on the television, and you're likely to see, at least if you watch the same programs I do, one of those commercials for the clapper, the Life Alert medical bracelet, "I've fallen and I can't get up," or that damn jitterbug phone, "bigger buttons, larger screens, and simpler menus." Not to mention the Saturday Night Live sketch showcasing the Amazon Echo Silver Edition, designed for the greatest generation. It will answer to any name even close to Alexa, like Allegra, Anita, and Alopecia, because, you know, old people can't remember things properly. We're shunned or caricatured, or both. We're even erased. We are nearly 50% of the U.S. population, but only turn up in 15% of media images, from the movies to advertisements. Looking back, I can see more readily how much of my own ageist judgment and shame colored how I saw my parents and the tone of my list. As my parents' health declined, my feelings often translated into a quickness to anger, a biting edge that now saddens me. My own fears of becoming old overrode my better judgment and my usually kinder self. But one other thing stood out. It is one thing to be up in years, and it's another to allow yourself to be limited by your age. Too often in my life, I've caved to the inner voice that's held me back. You may know that voice from your own head. Not smart enough. Fraud. You don't deserve it. I can't promise I will always follow my list to a T, or that I will never hear that voice again. But I can, and do promise, I won't give in to that voice when it cries, "Too old." When it does, I'll be sure to tell it, "Shut the F up." And when it happens to you, I'll say, "Read my list," or "Start making your own today." When the time comes, keep the promises you made to yourself. And now, one of the stupid things that Stephen Petro promised he wouldn't do when he got old. The chapter, I won't lie about my age, even on dating apps. I used to be one of those people who shaved a few years or more off their true age, either to avoid appearing like a dinosaur or to improve their odds of finding a match online. But no more. Now I'm out and proud about the years I've logged. 6 months after I separated from my husband, I joined Tinder, one of the many dating apps available to singles ready to mingle. Soon enough, I found a match. Michael, who gave his age as 50. I recognized him right away, since he'd been a college classmate of mine. He was 50 the way I was 57 on my profile, which is to say we were both 60 at the time. I had to admit he looked great for 60, but his forehead crevices and droopy eyelids did him no favors as a 50-year-old. Michael should have taken the advice once given to me. Add 7 years to your age, and then people will be amazed at how good you look. I chatted with Michael, asking how his subterfuge, okay, let's call it lying, was working out for him. He explained seriously, it's not the number that matters. It's the appearance and energy of youth. If you don't act like a crabby man online, you can be any age you want. That really didn't answer my question, which I re-asked, and he replied. Half the guys I meet get up and walk out on me when I tell them I'm actually 60, he said. But half of them don't, and getting in the door is all that matters. To be honest, I don't have his chutzpah. That's one reason I've stopped lying about my age. I'd like to say that it's all about my quest for authenticity, but I'll admit, it also has to do with the internet ratting me out. Frankly, it used to be so easy to lie, or just not tell the truth. 10 years ago, when I was in my early 50s and didn't yet have a Wikipedia page, which shouts your actual birthday for the first line of the entry, I remember nodding my head in agreement when a fellow writer asked if I were in my 40s too. In fact, I already had my AARP membership card, but I saw no reason to dispute his generous assumption, especially since I was surrounded by a cadre of his contemporaries. This wasn't lying. It was merely a sin of omission. Then came the separation, followed by my divorce. I turned 60, entering the decade of life known as sexagenarian, which I like to joke is all about sex. As I mentioned, I joined Tinder and Match, OkCupid, and some other dating services, and with a single click, or two, or three, I became 3 years younger. I was a 50-something again, or what I call mid-century modern. On most apps, fibbing proved easy enough. I just selected 1960, instead of 1957 as my birth year. Tinder proved more complicated since it pulls profile data from Facebook, where I was 60. That meant I had to change my birth year on Facebook too, and then mark it as private, since many people on that platform know my real age. I'd decided it was okay to fib about my age to strangers, but I didn't actually want to be unmasked as a liar to people I know. I knew it was important to be proud and honest about my age and that my purported birth year was a lie. But there are liars, and then there are liars, or so I told myself, and I simply wanted to be matched with people in the right age group. After all, I heard that voice in my head. Who could be looking for a guy in his 60s? Like my college classmate Michael, I justified my fibbing in two different ways. First, if I were to use my real age and the man of my dreams set his search parameters to a maximum of 59, he'd be shown candidates in their 50s, but he would miss me. A single friend who is 54 and has some experience in this game told me, "A lot of people restrict their searches to people within a certain age range. So I say put whatever age you want, but disclose before you meet the person. If the true age is a barrier, you're wasting everyone's time. However, if fudging gets you in the door, then you're honest about it before wasting someone's time, then no harm, no foul." There it was, that same phrase Michael had used, getting in the door, which is another way to say the end justifies the means. For the record, this second friend is a lawyer and has never suffered in making a persuasive argument, even when wrong. The other reason I justified my fibbing, I wasn't nearly as bad as the fellow described by a 26-year-old woman in an online rant. She went to the coffee shop expecting to meet the man in the photo she saw online. Blonde, early 30s, nice abs. But when she looked around the shop, the only man who was alone and obviously waiting for someone was in his 60s, sporting gray hair and a fleshy midsection. She was furious. This man clearly thought his date wouldn't notice that he'd lied through his teeth. Apparently, she did notice. Or should I say, we notice. To be fair, though, sometimes it's not so much lying as self-delusion. In my own mind, I'm still a dead ringer for 45, and more than once, I've been caught by surprise when I see myself in a mirror. I'm sure I wasn't the only one thrown for a loop by that Facebook 10-year challenge, where you posted a photo of your current self side by side with one from a decade ago, making me wonder how I'd changed so much without having noticed it. Cue Doris Lessing, who wrote, "The great secret that all old people share is that you really haven't changed in 70 or 80 years. Your body changes, but you don't change at all." Let's be real, though. It's not only men who lie. A fellow who didn't give his name told Metro News, "I had a date with a flight attendant whose profile said she was 45. Only when she arrived, it turned out she was 55, and she looked every bit of it. He was further put off when she was very blasé about her fabrication. She told him that she liked younger men and didn't want to scare them off." While I was still in my fibbing stage, I made it a policy to disclose my real age the first time I met someone face to face, no matter if it had taken a white lie to get in the door. Unlike Michael's experience, I never had anyone give me the stink eye and turn on his heels, but I remember one time I was chatting online with a university professor who claimed he was 56, when he asked me out of the blue, "What's your real age?" and accused me of lying. Alas, I had already told him my real name, which he had Googled, of course, and he found my wiki page, which shouted, "Stephen Petro is 60. I didn't even have time to reply before he asked how he could trust me about anything else I'd told him. "Well, you could read my full Wikipedia page," I wanted to say, but it didn't matter. He had already blocked me. I never did find out his real age. Lots of online daters have grown wise to fibbers and have learned to work lie-detecting questions into early conversations to squirrel out a match's real age. My 60-year-old college mate Michael told me he'd created a cheat sheet to help him answer the most frequently asked questions during early texting, while still maintaining his fiction of being 10 years younger. While we were both born in 1957, he needed to talk about his life as though he had been born in 1967. That can be tricky to keep track of. If someone asked Michael if he remembered the JFK assassination, he'd have to do some quick thinking to know that his fake younger self hadn't yet been born in 1963. If someone asked, "Where were you when you heard about the Americans being taken hostage in Iran?" he might unthinkingly answer that he had just started medical school. If he were really 10 years younger, he would have been in middle school for that 1979 event. It's true what they say about lying being hard work. There's an awful lot to remember once you start to weave that tangled web. In the end, because of my discomfort with lying and that damned wiki page, I decided to try an experiment. Using the same photos, I listed 3 different ages on 3 different dating apps to see if it would make a difference. After 6 months, I had my answer. No, it didn't. For guys in their 50s or 60s, I was age appropriate, no matter my stated age. For men looking for a daddy, I qualified every single time. And for those younger guys who didn't want an old fellow, I couldn't even get a woof. I'm now my real age on all of the apps, except one. Tinder still lists me as 3 years younger. I've tried to fix it. I really have. But Tinder won't let you change your age once you've created an account. My written profile says it's a mistake, but anyone searching my age will still find the younger me. But hey, sometimes there's only so much a truth-telling person can do. And I leave you with these quotes from newretirement.com. At age 20, we worry about what others think of us. At age 40, we don't care what they think of us. At age 60, we discover they haven't been thinking of us at all. Ann Landers. You're only young once, but you can stay immature indefinitely. Ogden Nash. And old age is an excellent time for outrage. My goal is to say or do at least one outrageous thing every week. Maggie Kuhn. We've run out of time for today's episode of That's a Laugh. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please be sure to listen next time. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. That's a Laugh is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Are you enjoying the show? Do you have any humorous quotes or authors you'd like to share? We'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions or comments about this or any other NCRS shows, please call us at 919-832-5138. Our number one more time is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.